One of the realizations that I came to was that God is a behaviorist. He understands people quite well since He made them. He understands what turns people on. He knows how to reinforce people, positive, negative. He knows that people operate real well on the basis of rewards. And He's got a whole system of rewards. And throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, God talks about a reward system. So we're going to talk a little bit about paradigms for reinforcement. Some of this, those of you who have had any psychology at all, some of this will be very, very familiar to you. You look at positive reinforcement, you have a stimulus, you have an appropriate response, and you get a positive reinforcement. I don't know that that's in there. It may not even be in there at all. You may have to use the back of one of your sheets.
Is there a reason for the blank sheets in here?
No. If you have blank sheets, just use one of those. That's great. Man, how appropriate. And you all can relate to that. When you were at home, if your parents asked you to do something and they said, if you'll do it, you can have the car tonight, or if you'll do it, I'll fix you this particular kind of food for dinner tonight, or if you'll do it, there's some sort of positive reinforcement. So they give you the stimulus, you do the appropriate response, and they give you the positive reinforcement. That's the best kind of reinforcement you can give. That is not the most prominently used form of reinforcement, however. But it is most profitable. If you want to teach somebody a new skill, the best thing you can do is to give them positive reinforcement. Even though they will not do the skill perfectly the first time, nor will they even perhaps even do it properly, even part of it, maybe just a little part of it. But to give them reinforcement for the job that they did, for the part that they did right. When we would train our kids when they were real, real little, they were beginning to learn how to make their beds or to eat properly. By the way, one of the neatest reinforcements you can give to children is to clap for them. Just clap. I mean, even adults like that, by the way. I mean, if they didn't like it, people would not perform in front of audiences. Right? Yes.
Just to reinforce you on what you said, but my 4-year-old, I'm trying to get him to stop sucking his thumb. We had him to the dentist and put wires in his mouth. They spent a lot of money. We tried all sorts of things. The other day I said, son, if you can go for half a day without sucking your thumb, I'll buy you an ice cream cone. I stretched that to a day, up to 2 days.
That's right. Positive reinforcement. And people say, but that's bribing. It's not bribing. It's letting the child or the adult know what the positive consequence is of accepted behavior.
Kind of like, in Deuteronomy where it says, if you will do these things, then I'll bless your land.
That's right. That's right. That God wasn't bribing you. He was telling you, if you do them, this is what you're going to get. There are consequences to all of our behavior. And if there are positive consequences, people tend to respond to those a lot nicer. They don't respond real well to negative consequences. There are other things that happen. There are ways to punish, and we'll talk about that later on, that are very effective. But when my kids were beginning to learn how to make their beds, all we did was teach them how to pull the sheet up. The first step, of course, was how to straighten the sheet underneath out. That's all we wanted to do. Learn how to get on the side, pull down, get on the other side, and pull down until there was no wrinkles in there. So the first time they did it partly, and there was fewer wrinkles, which is good enough for me. Great, man, I appreciate that. You did it, you had your hands in the right place, and you've got the right idea. Now there's still some wrinkles left, but those will go away with time as you learn how to do it a little stronger and that sort of thing. We also had a reinforcement chart that we would put up on the, held up with magnets on our refrigerator. And every night, we would come back together, and we would go through that chart. We had a little number system and a point system and that sort of thing. And for everything they did right, they got an M&M. And if they only did it half right, I broke it in half. That's not easy to break an M&M in half, but that's what I did. And they got points for every one of those things. If they got 16, they were all usually about 20 things on the list. If there were 16 out of 20, I gave them a bonus. And if they got 5 out of 7 days that were bonus days, I gave them another bonus. And if they got 21 out of 30 days for the month, I gave them another bonus on top of that. What ended up happening, within a very short period of time, they were getting 30 out of 30 days, all perfect, all X's. And we had to come up with a super bonus. And they wanted to learn the tasks. They looked forward to learning the tasks. They looked forward to pleasing their mom and dad. They looked forward to the M&Ms. They looked forward to our praise and our appreciation and our clapping and that sort of thing. They wanted that. They liked that so much that there wasn't any difficulty with motivation. We finally figured, well, they've learned enough and they're doing extremely well. We can take the charts down. They said, no, put them back up. And we had to put them back up again. And we finally had to gradually work that out and so we could get them off the refrigerator. But they still like that. Still like that whole concept. Positive reinforcement really works. In the ministry, the same kind of thing. There have got to be reward systems that you develop that makes it desirable for them to be a part of the ministry. And it may simply be the reinforcement of fellowship and friendship. Real friendship. That may be the motivator. Now, that will be the motivator for most of your people. For some few, you're going to have a few more things than that. Negative reinforcement. This is where you have a negative stimulus and they make the right response and the stimulus stops. The negative stimulus, as you might do it, say, in a research environment, of a shock. And they've got to find the right button on the wall to stop the shock. That's the appropriate response, and then the shock goes away. It's the rat in the cage where you start electrifying the rungs he's got his feet on until he presses, and when he presses that bar, the shock goes away. It's like beating your head up against a wall, and then when you stop, the stimulus is gone. The pain starts to go away. It feels good to quit. We don't use negative reinforcement very often. In an interpersonal relationship basis, because what you'd have to do is develop. They use it in a POW camp, for instance. You might use it in a stress camp where somebody is going out to learn and to test their limits, and you put them in a difficult, which we would call a negative stimulus environment. For instance, of having to scale a cliff backwards going down. That's a negative stimulus for most people. Very uncomfortable because I can't see where I'm going. I'm not even sure I can hold on to the rope very well. But they make the proper response of going down the rope and the stimulus is gone. Okay. In a POW camp, they use it extremely well by producing what is called torture. The appropriate response is to tell them what they want to know and the torture stops. Avoidance training. If you want people to learn how to avoid things, there's a stimulus and a time interval. Can be a variable amount of time. And they have to either make the appropriate response or they get the negative reinforcement. They get the negative stimulus, which they don't particularly want. The stimulus might be in a research environment, the cage. There's a certain time interval, say 2 or 3 minutes, that the animal is allowed to run around the cage, but if they don't press that bar before the end of that time, they're going to get a shock. And so they avoid the shock by making the appropriate response. On the human level, you put your kid in the room, and the necessity is for that child to clean the room. And you give them an appropriate time level, a time experience there for them to get started. If they haven't started by that time level, you give them a spanking. Or some other punishment, or whatever it is that you've decided is going to be the negative stimulus. So they have learned to avoid the negative stimulus by making the proper response. And by the way, sometimes punishment can be different for different people. I do believe in corporal punishment, spanking, for instance. But there also can be times when the best punishment you can give is simply, like for instance, my son, one of the things that he cannot stand the most is to be stimulus deprived. Sitting in the middle of his bed, without book, without toy, without radio, with nothing, he just has to sit there. Stimulus deprivation. He does not like this. Not very comfortable. He would rather do what he's got to do, even if it's unpleasant, than to have that stimulus deprivation. And that works very effectively for him. Some kids, they could care less. Man, they'll sit there and daydream. Okay. Another negative stimulus could be a long lecture because they did not do what they were supposed to do. Most kids don't like that either. Most adults don't like that either. And then punishment. Punishment is where you have a stimulus, they do the inappropriate thing, and they get a negative stimulus. And you all know the punishment routine. You've probably been through it enough times in your life. We probably don't have to discuss that a lot. So the one you want to center on is that number one, the positive reinforcement. That's the one that's going to make the difference. And so let's go into that positive reinforcement from the standpoint of praising. And that is in your sheet. It's one that's headed up by the word praising. I believe it's in your sheet. What number is it? Page 10. Thanks. One of the statements that you need to adopt, and it comes out of The 1 Minute Manager. If you haven't read that book, I'd recommend that you read it. It's an excellent little book. 1 Minute Manager will take you about an hour to read if you take notes on it. Very simple. And then the next book after that, his sequel, is Putting the 1 Minute Manager to Work. It's another good book. But one of the key phrases he uses in that book is, find somebody doing something right. And then let them know it. Most of our attitudes, most of the ways we do things is looking for people who are doing something wrong and finding out, discovering those people and then chastising them. See, that's punishment. Punishment is not a good motivator. Praising is. Now, there's a time for punishment. There's a time for reprimanding. And we're going to talk about that next after we deal with praising. There's a way of handling that. Punishment is very, very difficult if done properly, which most people, by the way, do not do properly. For praising to be effective, you need to be clear and precise. When you wrote that report, it's the clearest. It's the best I've seen. It covered all the bases, clear and precise. When you shared the gospel with that individual, he couldn't have missed it. Man, you had it right down the line. You had all the proper scriptures there, and you spent the proper amount of time on them. Clear and precise. Not just saying, yeah, that was a good job in there. Well, yeah, what did I do right? I don't know. It's a good job, though. Not very clear, not very precise. Praising can be used and is the only thing that will be used to help people reach their full potential. Praising and positive reinforcement, rewarding, that sort of thing. That's under this whole thing of praising. Praising is verbal, but you can praise somebody non-verbally. You can praise them by a pat on the back. You can praise them by a smile. You can praise them by giving them a reward of some sort. Punishment does not help people reach their full potential. Now, you can use the combination of the two, and with punishment used properly, you can begin, if you do it right, and you couple that with some other things I'll share with you in just a little bit, you can actually help people reach their full potential through the process of reprimanding. There are times when touching can convey an awful lot in the area of praise and reward. But you need to do it in such a way. First of all, you need to know the person. You need to know whether or not that's a permissible activity for you with that individual. Some people do not like that. Make sure that you do not violate their space if they do not like that. Okay? But make sure that you are doing it in a way that gives and not takes. People know instinctively that you are taking something from them by your touching. It is really a manipulative device. Okay? You need to, if that's how you're feeling at the time that you're giving a praise, don't touch. Simply give the praise and stay away from the physical contact. But the physical contact is a very powerful communicator. That's why it has to be done well and with the right intentions and motivations. Praise just as soon as you possibly can. After the event that is praiseworthy, praise just as soon as you possibly can. The closer to the event that is praiseable, the more reinforcement for that particular event that it is. The more likely is that event or those things that were done in that event will be repeated in future events. And by the way, when you are first teaching something, when you are first developing a person in a skill or an attitude, you have to have a continuous schedule of reinforcement. That means every single time they do it right, you tell them they've done it right, and you praise them. Again, using my children as an example, every time the kids pulled the sheet right, they got a clap and a praise for it. Now, once they got the job down, and it's pretty consistent, and I don't praise them all the time, you go to what is called an intermediate level or schedule of reinforcement. If you continue to do continuous reinforcement, continuous praise, you'll actually eliminate the behavior. After a while, they say, it doesn't make any difference what I do. I get praised for it, for pulling the sheet down. And I'm getting tired of hearing my dad do that. I'm getting tired of hearing him clap. I wish he'd quit. And the same thing is true with adults. But if you go to an intermittent level of reinforcement or interval of reinforcement, you'll actually end up putting that particular behavior in concrete. And that, by the way, is one of the distinguishing features between praising people and punishing them. Punishment must be always done all the time for the particular behavior. You cannot punish for this behavior today and not punish for it tomorrow. It has got to be punished tomorrow and the next day. And any time you see it come up, you have got to punish for it if you start to punish for it. Because if you don't, if you go to that intermittent level or intermittent schedule, you'll actually train in them the very behavior you want them to stop. Because they don't know when. Maybe I can get away with it today. I got punished yesterday. Maybe I can get away with it today because Dad doesn't always punish me for that. And you actually will train in the behavior you want them to quit. Tell how good you feel about what they've done. We have a system in our offices whereby people can critique the service that they've gotten. A little form they can fill out and send in either with their signature on it or anonymously. And any time those things come in with comments, if the blocks are not just checked, if the blocks are checked and they come in with people written comments, I will write in a particular pen with a particular color. That's the only time I use that color, pen. The only time is when I'm writing positive comments back to the person who got positive comments. And one of the things that I will tend to say is, I appreciate the fact that what you have done has made us all look good. That makes me feel good, and I appreciate it. Or words to that effect. Encourage them to do more of the same. Keep up the good work. Hey, I really appreciate the fact that you have learned how to treat the people who have come in who tend to sometimes come in with an anger response, and that you've been able to learn how to treat them well and make them feel accepted. I appreciate the fact that you can go to anybody's room in that dorm over there, and no matter whether that person's got all kinds of porn on the wall or is listening to acid rock, you can still make them feel like they count in this world. And you don't condemn them, although they are doing condemnable behavior. You don't condemn them. And man, you ought to keep that up, because you're the kind of person who can make a dent in this world for God. Tell them in person, if you possibly can, whenever you can. Tell them in front of a group, if you can do that. Tell them in notes, if you can do that, if that's the best way to do it because of the situation. Write them a little note. One of the best things you can do, by the way, you want to really have a good relationship with your parents? Write them a note, for no reason. Send them a card. Not for a birthday, but go out and buy, spend your money on a card. And write them a love note. Just say, you know, there may have been times when we didn't get along. There may be some times when there have been some arguments that were some heavy, heavy stuff. But I want you to know I appreciate the fact that you took care of me as a kid and that you've helped me to grow up. And I just want you to know I love you. And then wait till the next time you go home. Normally a very positive response. Praise them through others. Let it get back to them that you have shared with somebody else what you think about them. And you know how to do that. You know how to be able to share with somebody else. And you know that if they are friends with them, that eventually they might get back to them. May not get back to them. That's okay. But it has a good chance of it getting back to them. Again, catch people doing something right. Look for what they're doing right, and then let them know you've noticed that and that you appreciate it. And they need to keep it on. The most powerful thing you can do to motivate people in a voluntary organization is that right there. Becoming their friend, understanding where they live, spending time with them. Even if it's only sporadic time, and praising them. By the way, one of the neat things you can do if you know a guy's got a Bible study is occasionally to meet an individual in the Bible study. Go to lunch with them, take them out on a court somewhere, meet them after a class or whatever, and just ask them, how's it going? How do you like so-and-so who's leading the Bible study? Isn't he a neat person? You know, I just really respect Jeff. Jeff is a really a neat guy. Barbara really has a real concern for people, and I'm just really glad that you have a chance to work with her, you know, in the Bible study. That'll get back to that person. If it doesn't get back verbally to that person, it'll get back in terms of their relationship to that person. That's another neat way to be able to motivate people in a voluntary situation. Now, let's come to the hard side. Praising is fun. You can learn to do praising. And by the way, you do have to learn how to do it. Human beings do not come by it naturally. We tend to be much more perfectionistic in condemning people and criticizing them than in praising them. Page 5. But there are times when you have to reprimand, you have to correct. Make sure that you base it only on the facts. And that's a hard one. Because we may hear something from somebody else. Somebody who may have been the recipient of an experience with somebody you need to correct. But do not make the assumption that what they said is valid. It may be. But their perceptions may be wrong. It is easy for us, it's amazing how easy it is too, it is easy for us to be able to see or to hear or to experience things that were never part of the interchange. Or to cut out things that were a part of that interchange because of our filtering system in our brain. We are prone to see something from somebody. The guy or the gal happens to be somebody we know is very, very much a part of the world. So we know that they use a particular term. We never have used it. But we're just absolutely sure half an hour later that that was part of their conversation. It was that term that we don't like to hear. By the same token, somebody who is Mr. Super Spiritual or Mrs. Super Spiritual, who may have used that term, we didn't hear it. We don't have any expectation that person would speak like that. They did. So base it only on the facts. If you have to correct somebody, you talk to that person about what actually happened before you make the correction. Now, you're liable to find out that you've made an incorrect correction. Reprimanding is important for you to get close or to touch them. Reprimanding needs to be done on the basis of friendship and concern for that person, not just the correction of behavior. And there I'm talking about the business environment just as much as I'm talking about the home and ministry environment. Now, there are times when you want to put up barriers on purpose. There are times when I will reprimand from behind my desk. And that person will stand in front of my desk or sit next to my desk. But I want that barrier there on purpose because I'm trying to convey something intentionally. But you have to be careful. You have to have mapped that out beforehand. Most of the time when I have to do a reprimand, I sit right next to that person. I may even walk up to them in the hall, put my arm around them and say, "Hey, you and I need to talk about it. I've got some difficulties. I need to share some things with you. I need to get some information from you." If the person has done something that is absolutely a taboo because of the value system you've established, and they have broken that taboo, that value, then it's necessary perhaps, in order to convey to them the seriousness of what they have done, that you are willing to put a barrier between them. Because they have done that. They have done that already. They have produced the barrier. That desk between them is merely the physical manifestation of the barrier they have created. If, for instance, in the BSU thing, you have to bring in somebody and talk to them about adultery. They've gotten themselves involved in adultery or fornication. That may be the time that you put that desk between you. Now, it may not stay there. That may be how you start. As they get a chance to talk about what happened, you may find out, in fact, what you heard was not true at all. And they weren't involved in it at all. At that time, you move away from that desk. It may be, yes, indeed, and they are extremely repentant for that. They are really sorry. They made a mistake. Then you get up and move around. If they become belligerent, defensive, angry, bitter at you for even bringing it up and having the guts to do it, the barrier stays. Now, there's a time, even during those experiences, when I will modify that. If I want to help that person to try to get beyond the anger and the bitterness, I may walk around where that person is sitting and sit down next to them. There's a whole process. You have to use a lot of nonverbal communication to indicate to them where you're coming from. And I will sit there a lot of times absolutely silent for 3, 4, 5 minutes. Not a word is spoken. That is hard to do. And that's harder on the person who has to experience your silence. And then I let them know how disappointed I am. And I don't say, "I am really disappointed in your behavior." I indicate to them that I am personally sorrowful, that it hurts me deep inside that they have done this sort of thing, because I've really felt that they are far better than that. That's not how I look at them as being in any normal sense. That to me that's an aberration of what they are. That they're not like that normally. That they don't normally do those kinds of things. So they give them a sight to look at. Hey, he doesn't see me that way normally. That's not how I am normally. He must see me as better over here. And I let them know that too. That's a part of the punishment thing that helps them move away from just the punishment and into doing the right thing. No, it doesn't have to. In my office, there are just a certain number of chairs, and if I don't sit behind my desk, then I don't sit. and it makes it uncomfortable for them because my desk is like here, there'll be a chair here and a chair here, and then there's chairs around. If I stand out in front, these people don't see me. So it's actually better, more conducive to conversation for me to be behind my desk, and it's not a barrier then. Yeah.
Well, if your situation wasn't in such a way that you had to be behind your desk, would you stay behind
it? Only when I have decided that that's what I want to do because I want to convey something.
Okay. So if you had a bigger office and you could all get in a circle,
I'd sit out in front.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sure would. I wouldn't even mind sitting on my desk if the desk were able to be back far enough to where that would still make a circle. But it doesn't. So I can't do that. Again, getting back to this punishment thing for something that's heavy, not only do you have to let them know that you are disappointed in their behavior, not only do you have to let them know that that is not how you see them normally, but they have also got to know that if they are repentant, may not use that term. I never use that term unless I'm talking to another person who's a Christian and I know they understand that language. If they are willing to, if they show remorse and they indicate that to me, then I will let them know that after the punishment is over, it's over. And I'm not going to bring it up again. As far as I'm concerned, our relationship is right back where it was. And, I just really appreciate the willingness to share and time. That, in fact, that happened with that example I gave this morning about the guy who displayed pornographic material in the office. And I sat there with the desk between us, him off to the side, so it wasn't just quite as much of a barrier. But when we got all done, I was around that desk, I was shaking his hand, and he was glad that he'd been in my office. He thanked me in many ways. He thanked me for having the guts enough to bring it up to him. I've had people thank me when I have given them punishment in the Air Force, which was detrimental to their career. And they knew it was detrimental to their career. They had to write a letter that was going to go into their, what is called a letter of reprimand, and it had to go into their files. And they knew that. And it was going to stay there until they left. And I knew that could have a detriment in terms of their being promoted. And they would thank me. Just below Article 15. Article 15 could be the next step, but this letter of reprimand could also mean that they wouldn't get the endorsement that they would need on an APR, on a performance report, and that sort of thing. They understood that. And yet I've had people come and thank me for that. Because of handling the reprimand and the punishment properly. That's what makes it so difficult. Because you still have to show concern for that person as being somebody you think that can be a lot better than that behavior ever showed. And also making sure they understand that you are not going to hold that against them. And then once the punishment is over, it is over. There may be some continuing consequences, like the letter or the Article 15. But nonetheless, it's over. I had one individual who had the opportunity of being court-martialed. And only because of that person's willingness to deal with the issue frankly and openly, and to be able to show some remorse, did the court martial not go through? And they gave a lower level. In fact, it was an Article 15 proceeding, a much lower level thing. And the individual is now being able to operate more effectively than she ever did before, because she was willing to confront the issue. She knows that it's over with, and she's pressed on. And she was appreciative of that. Here's some things you need to tell them. Precisely what was wrong. And by the way, if you don't know what was precisely wrong, then you can't tell them. And if you don't know, then you ought not to be involved in punishing them. Because you don't know they did anything wrong if you can't tell them precisely what was wrong. That's one of the reasons why you talk to them first. There have been a number of times when people have come to me and said, look, so-and-so did this. A dastardly deed. And I would call them in and find out, they didn't do that. They did something else that this person perceived to be something else. And what I had to do is go back and correct the first individual in terms of their perceptions. Oh, I didn't realize that was their intent. I thought they were making a sexist comment or a racist comment, and that wasn't their intent at all. I misunderstood. Communication is such a difficult thing to get accurate in the first place. Tell how you feel. This is where what is usually left out of the punishment sequence. Hey, I am really hurt. In fact, one of the things that I will do when people come into my office sometimes and I have to reprimand them, the first thing I ask them is, have I done something personally to you to make you angry or bitter or vengeful? To have you go ahead and do what you did. You know, am I partly responsible for what you did? Understanding they're responsible for their actions, but did I produce the environment in which they felt desirous of going out and doing something? And that's usually a very surprising question for them. They don't understand why, where I'm coming from. And I let them know, look, I know that I can do things that may tick somebody off. And if I'm responsible for that, if I have created the environment where you didn't want to stay with the values that we've established, then I need to know what I did. And if I did them wrong, then I need to ask you for your forgiveness. Most people don't know how to handle that, but they're willing to accept the punishment afterwards as a result of that. So you let them know that how you're feeling, annoyed, frustrated, whatever. Next thing you let them know is how competent they really are. Hey, I know that you did that. And you and I know that it was not right to do that. But you know, that's not how I normally see you. You're probably one of the more professional people on my staff. And that's why it does hurt so much. That's why I am so concerned. If it's a person and we've got one individual on our staff who is not that professional, I'll tell them, you know, you've got the ability to be professional. I've seen it and I can pick it out and I can tell them the times when I've seen it and I'll tell them that's when I've seen it before. Why don't you do that now? You can do it. You can be competent. Let them know that you respect them. Just because they have done something wrong does not mean that you cannot care about them or respect them. And I let them know, hey, I don't respect the behavior you just did. That was wrong. I will never respect that behavior. But I want you to know that I can separate your behavior from who you are. And I can still respect you as a person and care for you as a person. And I'll still be your friend as far as that's concerned. But that behavior is not acceptable. Look at the behavior and not the person. Do not attack their worth or their value. I've told my children over and over again, and it's an important thing for them to hear, even to the point to where they can say, yeah, I know that's true, Dad or Mom. And that is, you are not on a performance basis with me. There will be nothing you can do to prevent me from loving you. I'm going to love you anyhow. Now, there will be things that you can do that may hurt our friendship. You may make it difficult for us to get along well, parent to child. Disobedience, rebellion, disrespect, that kind of thing is going to make it hard for me to like being around you. But I'm going to love you anyway. You know what happens? You don't get much disobedience, rebellion, all that other stuff, disrespect. You just don't get that much of it. And if you'll use this technique for punishment, you don't get revenge. And most kids try to think, as well as most adults, try to think of ways to get back at the punisher. And they become defensive and they withdraw. And if you use punishment or reprimanding properly, you can actually draw them into a closer relationship with you. Because I know you really still care about them. Yeah, maybe they did do something wrong. I've had my son come to me and say, Dad, I did this wrong and I need to be punished for that. Huh? You kidding me? No, I did this, and you didn't know about it, but it was wrong. I've had my daughter pull me aside, tears in her eyes. Dad, I said these things, and I've just got to unburden myself. I've just simply got to tell you that I did them and take whatever's coming to me because I just feel so bad about it. Man, I want that to happen. Why? Because as they continue to grow, I transfer that kind of relationship to God. That when they do something wrong, man, they get so burdened by it, they want to just go to God and get it off their chest. Confess it, repent of it, and move on in a different direction.
How do you deal with it as, you know, when they do something like that? You know, because I would think, you know, like the way God would deal with us when we confess and agree this was wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the consequences follow, sometimes they
don't. That's right.
Is that the same type of thing you sometimes
you bet.
They follow and sometimes they don't? Like
that's
if
right.
If you broke a window, they may have to go pay for it.
And they will have to go pay for it.
Okay.
If there are if there is that kind of thing, they have to make reparations. They do that. But I may not spank them for it. I may not put them in their room. I may not do whatever punishment else that has to be done for them. I may say, okay, you're forgiven. And the next thing you need to be able to do, especially with your children, but you can even do this with some adults, because I've done this. I haven't done quite this thing. I'll just explain what I did with my kids. After we would go through the punishment sequence and the praying for forgiveness sequence, asking God for forgiveness, they would do that first. And then I would spank them, never using my hand, always using something else so I could put the something else away. Then I would pick them up and put them in my lap and just love them. And just let them know, listen, I love you. I care about you. I care about you so much that I'm not going to permit that behavior to continue. Because it's not good for you. And sometimes I would be able to, when they got old enough to really understand, I'd say, look, if this behavior started here, let me tell you what it grows into later on. And later on, it's not going to be dad spanking. It's going to be the police putting you in jail. And they're not going to love you. They're just going to try and get you out of society so that you don't hurt somebody else. And they could begin to see the growth potential for consequences. But you're right, man. When they do a confession, if there's no reparations, then it's a decision point at that point. But sometimes I don't punish them at all.
Mm-hmm. Is that inconsistent with what you said before about always punishment following action?
No, because that's where part of the decision comes in. If I have always punished them for something, then they get punishment. Then I say, hey, son, you know what happens, right? Yeah, I know. And so we'll do that. If it's been one of those things where it hasn't been a punishable item because it just has never come up before, then I have more freedom to not do anything. Very often on an interpersonal basis, I'll have them go apologize to the person. That may be the only thing they need to do and ask for their forgiveness. Hard thing for kids to do, hard for grown-ups to do. That's one of the most effective things that I have used. With that individual that I was sharing with you before, I said, one of the things I want you to do now, that individual who you offended, I want you to go back to her, talk to her, and apologize for your behavior. Not easy. Be consistent, as we talked about before. It's got to be done all the time. Another thing that's bad about punishment, unless you do it properly, you usually have to scale up. That is, the punishment you use today maybe have to be stronger than tomorrow. Let me give you an example of that. And it's part of the rehabilitative process. Individual in my office wasn't doing the job properly. The very first thing we did was just talk about it. Let him know that I did care about him. I knew that he could do the job well, but he wasn't doing it well and needed to. And I'd sure appreciate it if he'd be willing to do that. And I just really felt like he had a lot of potential. He left the office, and he was okay for a couple of days, and he slipped back. Came back in the next time, I was a little bit more harsh with him. The third time, I gave him a letter of counseling. The fourth time, I gave him a letter of reprimand, which is a little more harsh. Now, the fifth time, he got an Article 15, which is in the Air Force, that's non-judicial punishment. They don't go before a court for it. But it can have some severe consequences, because anytime you give what is called an Article 15, that's the article under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, then they have to do some other punishment, like take a stripe away, take money away, restrict them, that sort of thing. And you can do that a number of times, making the punishment more and more difficult. Till finally, the person says, uncle.
You talked about facts, and when it gets, this is kind of subjective. What about a person, you discipline this person, and they're doing what you told them to do, but you really sense that they're doing it on the outside, but on the inside, rebellion. In other words,
sure.
Sit down and be quiet in the back seat, and while I'm sitting down on the outside, but I'm standing up on the inside.
That's right.
How do you deal with that? Because you can't deal with it on the basis of fact. You can't say, well, you're standing up to a person who's, sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't.
Well, I tell you what I do with my kids and with the people around me that are like that.
You can't praise. Can you praise them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I say, listen, I really appreciate the fact that you're being obedient. I've told you to sit down, and you are being sitting down, and I know you really don't want to. But I appreciate the fact that you've done it even though you don't want to. And by the way, I get the feeling that you're kind of angry about it. Is that right? You have to ask him if it's right. Well, yeah, I am. Well, would you mind talking about it a little bit? What makes you angry about it? Why? Well, it's the way you handled it, Dad. You know, the way. And sometimes my kids would come to me and say, Dad, you just punished me in anger. And I say, yeah, you're right, I did. Do it again and I'll punish you again in anger. No. I say, you're right. You're right, Derek. I did do that. And you know something, son? I was wrong. And I apologize for that. And there's no question about it that God has used you to convict me of my sin. Would you please forgive me? Hey, you bet, Dad. Great. And our relationship is right established again. Sometimes my son, when I've approached him that way and said, you know, I can tell that you're feeling upset inside and you're angry. He said, yeah, I don't know why, but I feel very, very rebellious. That's how I feel right now, Dad. And I know that's sin. And I apologize for that, too. And would you please just pray for me about that so I don't continue that way? See, part of the thing that happens when kids become teenagers is chemistry changes. You all have experienced it. Most of you are getting close to the end of your teenage years. And before you know it, you'll be able to shave and all that kind of stuff. I'm just kidding. but now, it doesn't happen to all kids. I don't know why it didn't happen to me, but I never had the chemistry change that produced rebellion in me. But some kids have a chemistry change that, man, when they hit the year 13, they become so rebellious, it is hard for them to be able to live with. It's really difficult. And sometimes you ask them, how come? And they'll tell you, I don't know how come. I have no idea. I just know I'm angry. And I'm upset. One day I went upstairs. My son was practicing his trombone. And tears were just rolling down his face. Man, my heart broke. I said, Derek, what's going on? He says, Dad, I don't know. I just feel so depressed. I want to cry. And I'm crying. He's trying to blow his trombone while he's crying. That's hard to do, folks, when you do that. It was chemistry. It was a teenager's chemistry. When it was done, it was over with. He says, I feel better now. I still don't know why I was crying. I have no idea. And sometimes they'll become angry because of chemistry. Sometimes they won't be able to sleep because of chemistry. Sometimes they can't get enough food to eat because of chemistry. Sometimes they can't stop. They've got to stop because they get too much food very quickly. And that's another thing you have to remember in a kid's life, is there are going to be those times when you cannot explain why they're acting like they are. And they can't either. They can't. That doesn't mean you don't punish them. Okay? If they have done a reprehensible activity, they have to know that there are consequences. Okay? Be immediate with your punishment. And it's getting harder to do in our society. Not so hard if you use the proper punishments on the job, in a ministry situation, that sort of thing. But hard to do with your children. I mean, you cannot spank somebody in a public place without running the chance of being turned in as a child abuser. And that's getting heavy in our society. I know of a preacher who lives in Pueblo, Colorado, was telling me of a very close friend and a person who goes to his church. In fact, he was visiting them at the time. Their son did something wrong and she took a small paddle and popped him on the legs one time. 20 minutes later, the sheriff was there and took the kid from her because a neighbor had turned her in, because she saw it through the door, and turned her in for child abuse. She had to go to get a lawyer to get the kid back. And the lawyer said, look, I've worked with 100 cases this year, just like yours. So far, none of them have I been able to get the kids back into the family. I don't expect to get yours back either. For her, fortunately, he was able to. It's getting harder. And I can tell you a worse war story than that. Well, it's almost 2 o'clock, and I can see you're sitting on the edge of your seat, and you're trying to non-verbally tell me it's time to quit, right? No. The emphasis has got to be on eliminating the bad behavior and keeping the person. You're not trying to destroy them as a person. All you want to do is get them to stop doing something. And then afterwards, you must show care and concern. And that's the key thing that most people leave out of punishment. Punishment is usually gotten into simply because it's easy, it's quick. It makes me feel good because I'm the punisher and I can make that person feel bad. You know, that's not the right way to do punishment. Punishment is hard work. It is enervating. It just takes energy out of you. But man, I'll tell you, it is great to do it if you do it right, especially with your kids or even with employees. People in the ministry, I've had to work with some people in the ministry who have done some things that have really been wrong. And to be able to sit down with them and confront them and reprimand them and come out of that whole situation in a closer relationship and a more concerned relationship than we had before. Yeah?
I have one question I recommend. A lot of the illustrations that you're talking about were in positions where you are automatically in authority.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What about, like, for us, a lot of us will be leading groups, maybe some mass Bible groups, some type of discipleship group. But really, it's a lot closer to a peer relationship, a lot closer to a student-student relationship. What are some things I'm recommending? And some of the things that you might be reprimanding for are just, you know, little things that are you're committed to them because of some of the disciplines that you're trying to keep them. And they're not moral.
Yeah.
Moral things.
That last example was, in fact, with the leader of my ministry, the person I was under. Not over. But he had done some things that were really out of line, and he needed to have those things shared with him. And we sat down and we discussed them. And I used basically exactly the same principles, showing care and concern, not condemnation. And didn't use anything different, any steps differently than what I did with my son, my daughter, or somebody on the job. And the response was the same. Because he was a mature, teachable person. Now, what does the Scripture say about dealing with scoffers? Yeah, that's right. There'll be times when you may have to reprove. By the way, that's one of those times you use the desk in between. When you know you're dealing with a scoffer, you're really trying to communicate to them, I'm in charge, not you. I give you one very, very poignant example. Fortunately, I haven't had too many people like this work for me, but one individual, a female who worked for me, for 2 years, I could not figure out how to deal with her. I don't care what I tried. Positive reinforcement did not work, but she thought every time I gave her a compliment, it was just a left-handed reprimand. That I really meant that she couldn't do something right, but I was chicken to say it, so I'd say she did something right when really it wasn't. And that's pretty distorted thinking, but that's the way she was. If I gave her a reprimand, then she accepted it. But the only way I could get this woman to finally come around was a last-ditch effort. I took her into her room. I had developed a whole list of things that I wanted to have her deal with. I said, now you sit down and you don't open your mouth until I am finished. She was a little surprised. She sat down. I started on what I wanted her to know. And she started to speak up. I said, don't open your mouth until I'm finished. And what I basically did was let her know where the cow eats the cabbage. Exactly what she'd done wrong, why it was wrong, why it never better be done again. And then when it was done, she was able to speak and she became a friend. Until the next time I had to do that. She had some difficulties, obviously some mental difficulties in self-acceptance. But I had to only do that several times. About every 3 or 4 months I had to do that. Or she wouldn't be a normal employee. But you can use the same steps when you're working with somebody who's a peer or even a superior. Yep. You guys want to take a break? It's been over an hour since we've been back. If you don't want to take a break, I'll press on. If you want to take a break, we can stop here. What's your druthers? Y'all staying awake enough? That's good. That's excellent. What's that? Oh.
How much longer have we got?
Oh, another 6 or 12 hours. No. See this stack here? We won't get through them today, but that's what I've got I can share. But I can share also the rest of it with you tomorrow, which we do not finish off today, we'll do tomorrow. And Saturday.
Would you like to pray? I know there are probably some folks. I know one guy for sure.
Pray. Are you going to start tomorrow at 9?
Yeah. We're going to start tomorrow at 9.
I actually have a question. You just quit and start there.
sense. Yeah, we can do that. If you'd like to do that, we can just take the rest of the day off and we'll hit it again tomorrow. And I've got some things that these I can finish up with, and then I've got some other things back at the ranch that I can that I'll also deal with. Tomorrow we'll be get into self-image and as well as some finishing these off. You want to do that? Let's do that. Fine. Okay. Let's close in prayer though before we start. Stop. Okay. Yeah. At nine. Right. Yeah, I'm afraid so. Let's pray. God, we just really appreciate your care and concern for us. We just appreciate the fact that you love us anyhow. That even when we sin, you still are concerned about us and you don't dump us. Man, if you did that, God, we'd have been dumped a long time ago. Because we are reprehensible people. We do lots of things which are just not pleasing in your sight. We even do some things which are good, but are not really the best that you want us to do. And even that, we know, to some degree saddens you. But God, thanks for striving with us. Thanks for sticking by us closer than a brother. Thanks for helping us to develop into the kinds of people you want us to be. God, just thanks for who you are. In Jesus' name, amen.